16. The first giant autonomic dozer groaned like a stiff old man, and as it dipped stink bug-like head down, tail up, the first scoop of earth, and a huge scoop, too, was gathered, pried loose, swung up, and then off to one side. The scoop of dirt was dropped into a waiting converter, also an auto circuit, operating homeostatically, without human attention. Within its field, the dirt was transformed into energy, and that energy, which did not deserve to be wasted, was carried by cable to a major storage meta-battery assembly a quarter mile away. The meta-battery, a development which had come shortly before the war, could store up power which, when read off as ergs, consisted of billions of units. And it could store that power for decades. The energy from the meta-battery would provide electricity to run the completed dwelling units of the Conapt buildings. It would be the source for everything that lit up, heated, cooled, or turned. Over the years, Runcible had made his modus operandi a highly efficient one. Nothing was discarded. And the real prophet, Robert Higg reflected as he stood near the autonomic dozer, or rather near the first one, 12 had gone into operation simultaneously, came ultimately from the people who would live in the Conaps. Because as they had worked below ground in their ant tanks, assembling leadys to augment the entourages, the private armies of the domain owners, now they would work for Runcible. The lower floors of each Conapt building consisted of shops, and in these shops the components for the leadys were made. The components turned out by hand, the intricate network of the surface autofac system having been wiped out by the war. Below ground, the tankers, of course, did not know this, had no idea where their supply of components originated, because to let them know this would have been to let them know, God forbid, that humans could live on the surface. And the whole point, Higg reflected, is to see that they don't know, because just as soon as they come up, we will have another war. At least so he had been told. And he did not question this. He was, after all, not a Yance man. He was merely an employee of the agency, of Bros. Someday, if he were lucky and did his job properly, Bros would advance his name as candidate. He would be legally entitled to seek out a hotspot for his domain, assuming any hotspot still existed by then. Perhaps, Higg thought, as a result of this one job, this major special agency project, I'll be a Yance man. And then I can start paying those private cops of Webster Foot to keep readings going for me in the hotspots that remain. I can start the long vigil like David Lantano did up until just recently. If he could do it, so can I, because who ever heard of him before? How's it look, Mr. Higg? A human workman yelled at him, as all the dozers dug, dropped their dirt into the converts, dug again. Okay, Higg yelled back. He walked closer to examine the exposed hard brown dirt. The dozers were to go down 50 feet, create a flat depression 5 square miles wide. In no sense was this an unusual excavation task, in terms of what Runcible's rigs could accomplish. The problem here at the start was merely to produce level ground rather than excavate as such. Surveying teams, high-type leadys, could be observed here and there, utilizing their tripod-mounted theodolites to determine the true horizontal plane. The digging, then, would not take much time. This was not like the days before the war when the ant tanks had been buried. This was nothing in comparison. Hence, the buried artifacts had to appear soon, or they would not be found at all. In less than 2 days, in fact, the digging would be done. I hope, Higg thought, there's been no foul-up, that the damn things aren't too deep, because if they are, then so ends the special project. It's over as soon as the first load of concrete is poured, the first vertical shafts go in. In fact, when the first plastic forms are laid to contain the concrete. And already the forms were arriving by airlift from the site of the last construction job. To himself he said, "So I better be ready. Any minute. To halt the dozers, stop the scooping and digging and whirring and wheezing, bring it all to a grinding halt, and then begin to yell my head off." He tensed himself, because within the brown, hard surface, below the level of dead tree roots, he already saw something glint, something smeared and dark, that would have passed unnoticed except for his vigil. The leadys wouldn't notice. The rigs wouldn't notice. Even the other human engineers wouldn't notice. They all had their jobs, as he had his. He peered. Was it just a rock, or was it the first of the... It was. A rusted dark weapon. Hard to believe, but the same that he had seen last night, shiny and new, just out of Yansman Lindblom's expert hands. What a change 6 centuries had brought. Hig felt a terrible, forbidding distrust of his senses. It couldn't be what Lindblom had made, what he and Adams and Brose and Lindblom had stood together viewing on the table. It was barely recognizable. He walked toward it, squinting in the sun. Rock or artifact? Hig waved to the dozer nearby, which automatically backed, leaving the area vacant for a moment. Descending into the depression, Hig walked to the spot, stooped by the embedded, dark, formless object. He knelt. "Hey!" he yelled, looking around, trying to find another human, not just Riggs and Letty's. There was Dick Patterson, another human, an engineer employed by Runcible, like himself. "Hey, Patterson!" Hig began to yell. And then he discovered that, God damn it, the thing was not an artifact. He had made his move too soon. Oh, Christ, he had flubbed it. Approaching, Patterson said, "Was it?" "Nothing." Furious, Hig strode back out of the depression. He signaled the dozer to start up again, and it did. It groaned back into operation, and the black object, nothing but a rock, disappeared under the tread of the rig. 10 minutes later, the dozer exposed something that shone white and metallic in the early morning sun, and this time there was no doubt. At the 10-foot level, the first artifact had come to light. "Hey, Patterson!" Hig yelled. But Patterson this time was not within sound of his voice. Reaching, Hig picked up a nearby walkie-talkie, started to broadcast a general call. Then he changed his mind. I better not cry wolf again, he realized. So he waved the dozer back, it seemed reluctantly, grumpily, to retreat under protest. And this time, when he strode over to the object, he saw with furious excitement that, yes, this was it. A gun of a peculiar sort, deeply stuck, thoroughly lodged in the soil. The mouth of the dozer's scoop had actually shaved off the top layer of rust, of soft corrosion, exposing still hard metal beneath. "Goodbye, Mr. Runcible," Higgs said to himself in exultation. "Now I will be a Yansman." He felt intuitively positive of it. "And you are going to learn what prison is like, you who've been building prisons for others." Again, waving to the dozer, this time to shut down entirely, he strode with vigor toward the walkie-talkie. It was his intention now to broadcast the code which would halt all operations, and would bring every engineer on the site and half the Letties on the run, demanding to know what was up. Secretly, he switched on his shirt-button camera, and at the same time started the AUD recorder. Runcible was not here, but Brose had at the last moment decided he wanted the entire sequence recorded, from the moment Hig first called attention to the find. He bent, picked up the walkie-talkie. A laser beam cut him, severed the right lobe of his brain and the skull, and passed on through his scalp, and he dropped to the ground, the walkie-talkie falling and shattering. There he lay. There he died. The autonomic dozer, which he had halted, waited patiently for a signal to resume work. At last, from another human engineer on the far side, the signal came. The dozer, with a grateful roar, started up. Under its treads, the shining, small metal object, embedded in the earth at the 10-foot level, exposed briefly to the sun after 600 years, disappeared. And in the next scoop, it disappeared along with the dirt into the converter. Without hesitation, the converter transformed it, with all its intricate wiring and miniaturized components, along with rocks and dirt, into pure energy. And noisily, the digging continued.